First contact. May 2011. I have seen many rattlesnakes. I have eaten fried rattlesnake, but only once have I ever been in contact with a living rattler. Though contact is not the word I really want, it is metaphorical and inexact. We did not touch. Maybe it was communication, though of a very limited kind, as communication between alien species is perhaps doomed to be. I have told the story often as a comedy, a story in which people behave ridiculously with a happy ending. Here it is. We were at the old ranch in the Napa Valley, and I was just about to sit down on one of the 1932 iron chaise lounges, carefully, because if you sit too far toward the end, the whole unwieldy thing stands up and throws you off like a bronco, when I heard a noise I recognized. That was the first communication. It was the hissing buzz of the rattlesnake's rattles. Startled by my movements, it was heading off into the high grass, rattling away. About 15 feet away, it looked back, saw me looking at it, and stopped there, its head up and facing me, and its gaze fixed on me, as mine was fixed on it. I hollered for Charles. The rattler paid no attention. I believe they are deaf. I suppose they hear their own rattle as vibration in their body, not in the air. Charles came out and we discussed the situation. Not calmly. I said, if he goes off into the high grass there, we'll never dare walk out in the pasture the whole time we're here. We thought we had to kill the rattlesnake. That's what you do, generally, in the country, at a place where little kids come and run around. Charles went and got the big, heavy, long-handled hoe my father called the Portuguese hoe, with which rattlers had been killed before, by others, not by us. Charles got close enough to strike. The rattler and I had never taken our eyes off each other, or moved. Charles said, I can't. I said, I couldn't either. So what do we do? We said. The rattler was probably thinking the same thing. Go see if Dennis is there, Charles said. I said, I don't think it'll move so long as we keep staring at each other. So you go. And Charles went up the driveway and down the road a couple hundred yards to our only near neighbors, the Cassetts. It took a while. All that while, the snake and I did not move and looked steadily into each other's eyes. They say a snake's gaze is hypnotic. But who is hypnotizing whom? We were like people newly in love who can't take their eyes off each other. This was not love, but it was something equally intense and even more immediately a matter of life and death. It is this brief time, 5 or 6 minutes, I suppose, 10 minutes at most, that over the years I have thought of again and again, always with the vividness of the moment and always with the sense of its importance or import, of there being a great deal to learn from it. During this time, the rattlesnake and I were alone together, alone in all the world. We were held together by common fear, bonded. We were held in the spell, entranced. This time was outside ordinary time and outside ordinary feelings. It involved danger for both of us, and it involved a bond between creatures who do not and cannot ordinarily relate to each other in any way. Each would naturally try not to relate, to just get away, or to kill in self-defense. In all these respects, I think it isn't amiss to think of this time as sacred. The sacred and the comic are not that far apart, something the Pueblo Indians seem to know better than most of us do. Charles and Dennis came panting down the driveway with a big galvanized garbage can and a piece of semi-rigid white plastic tubing, about 15 feet long. Dennis had the tube. He knew what to do because he'd done it before. A distinguished artist author of children's books, he was a year-rounder in the valley, and his house was on a pretty little property which, before the house was built, we used to call Rattlesnake Clearing. The snake continued to look at me only, and I at it only, while Dennis set the garbage can down on its side, with the opening facing the snake, maybe 20 feet from it, and very visible to it. Then, coming quietly round behind it at full tube length, he flicked the end of the tube near its head. That broke the spell. I looked away from the snake at the tube, the snake looked away from me at the tube, and then flowed hurriedly away from the thing, flicking out in the air behind it, and made straight for the welcoming dark cave of the garbage can. It flowed right into it, at which Charles ran to upend the can and clapped the lid on. A mighty and wrathful commotion took place inside the can. It shivered and trembled and all but danced. We stood in awe and listened to the rage of a truly angry rattlesnake in an echo chamber. It finally quieted down. Now what? Anywhere a good ways away from the house. There's the millionaire up at the end of the road, said Dennis. I've turned several snakes loose up there. A pleasing thought. The millionaire was never there. Nobody lived on his lovely hilltop. Excellent rattlesnake territory. The three humans and the garbage can all got in the car and drove up the road, the snake in the can making some vicious criticisms and a low, hissing buzz along the way. At the end of the road, we got out and laid the can down, knocked the lid off with the invaluable plastic tube, and watched the split-second disappearance of the snake into 1,000 acres of wild oats. It was our garbage can, the one that still stands up at the top of the driveway where the garbage company can collect on Mondays. I have never looked at that can since, in all these years, without thinking of what it held once. A teaching, a blessing, may come in strange ways, ways we do not expect or control or welcome or understand. We are left to think it over.